gentlemen, ghost nobody here, ready to bring you chapter 152 of Radiance, my original Fallout fan fiction.
Now, as always, if you can like, share and subscribe to this wherever you can, either on Spotify, Apple or any of the podcast network. And if you can leave reviews either at fanfiction.net, archiveofourown.org or even at my own website, ghostnobody.com, they're always appreciated. And, you know, I'll enjoy seeing what you guys are thinking and where you're feeling the story should be going. And if you do pop over to ghostnobody.com, why don't you check out Stormrider? You know, if big surly dragoness girls, little human mages, Lamia, elves, orcs, and a whole host of other beings in a magical kingdom across spread across a galaxy is your kind of thing, then check it out. And also, while you're at ghostnobody.com, why not check out the Ghostly Link section? To pick yourself up a copy of Mortis if you haven't already. Help support me and keep me doing what I love. Keep bringing original works to you, good people. So, as always, let's get on with the show, shall we?
Chapter 152, Drop Shot. No sooner had Angel's bullet found its mark, and the Minutemen commander began to fall, Angel was already moving. She knew she had a very limited window in which to make her escape. And she was going to have to move fast if she was not only going to get away from here undetected, was going to be able to reach her next target before they put out a full-blown alert. So throwing her rifle over her shoulder and onto its strap, Angel sprinted from the shooting position she'd set up and raced across the rooftop to drop down on the far side to ground level. No sooner had she hit the ground than she could already hear the alarms begin blaring behind her. It seemed this particular group were a lot more organised than the last lot, because no sooner had their commander fallen than rather than run around like a load of headless chickens trying to find a direction to go in, this group were already organising into fire teams to start scouring the area for the shooter. Angel already knew that if she didn't put some serious ground in between her and them, they'd pick up her trail and be on her ass the entire way to the next target, which really wasn't going to make taking them out any easier, that's for sure. So she decided to use one of her lesser used tricks in her arsenal. It was lesser used not because it wasn't effective, because it bloody well was, but the reason she tended to not use it, because it really didn't tend to fall in line with her stealthy nature or MO. But there was an old saying that said, needs must when the devil drives, and right now the fucker was most certainly behind the wheel. So Angel quickly took her bearings to line herself up with the next target, and she began to sprint. Once she got herself up to speed, she braced herself and then hit both the ground and then herself with a pair of powerful psychokinetic shocks. Honestly, it felt like either a giant invisible boot had just kicked her up the arse and sent her flying skyward, and like she'd been kicked into a field goal, or someone had simply strapped a rocket to her arse. Now, this ability was nowhere near as stable or accurate enough to be able to make her fly, but each hit did launch her about 700 metres forward of where she was fired off, though she did have to time her landing quite well, otherwise she hit a bit hard. So, it did allow her to cover ground pretty quickly in a pinch, and as it turned out, her instincts were spot on. It was not long after she began using the jumps to cover the ground quickly, she heard the telltale clatter of vertibird engines, and a brief look into the sky allowed her to locate the bird. And from what she saw, it was heading straight from the Minutemen HQ to the base she'd just left. And this bird wasn't carrying any cargo nets. That meant it was dropping someone off. Now, while she had no proof that it was directly related to her activities, she couldn't help but feel that it was rather suspect that all of a sudden a troop carrier was dropping off at the base that she'd just hit. Too much of a coincidence, really. So she decided to operate under the assumption that the Minutemen had deployed some kind of specialist hunter team now to track it down, which meant that she was not only going to have to pick up the pace, but at the same time make sure she wasn't making any mistakes that could easily put them on her trail. This was going to be a fine line to balance. A couple of long-range jumps later, and she was finally in range of her next target. Now all she had to do was hope they hadn't managed to get the message out to the other field commanders quick enough for them to batten down all the hatches. Or she was really going to have to start thinking outside of the box. Leviathan was going to be a tricky one, This wasn't the logistics group she was going after. This was a full-blown artillery company that she'd been tasked, and they'd been tasked with setting up long-range multiple strike cannons all across the region, capable of laying down some very accurate fire at a moment's notice. And from what the intel document stated, there was already a number of these sites set up across the region, and they were already active. So a very careful approach was warranted here. Just like that, she figured that this would be the case, that the artillery company had set up a place that not only provided them great sight lines in all directions, but also provided them some kind of cover from any potential attacks. In this case, atop an old overpass road. Angel found herself a spot to look at the overpass, near enough the same height, so she would have a straight shot at the place. But she could already see that that wasn't going to work, as they'd erected high siding all around the place, made of heavy-duty corrugated iron panels, and from the looks of it, tyres filled with sand and rocks lining the rear of the panelling. So, not even her anti-material rifle was going to be able to punch through this lot. This lot were a lot more organised. There was nothing for it. She was going to have to do this one, up close and personal. Now normally Angel would wait for darkness to fall for attempting such a risky incursion like this one. But with a hunter squad having been deployed on her trail, and the very real threat that had already warned the other commanders to be on their guard, she really had no choice but to go in immediately. Now just because she wanted to act fast didn't mean she was going to be reckless or stupid. You can do things quickly while ensuring they're done properly. Plus, getting inside the base would give her a good chance to find out exactly how well her artillery system calling system worked, and possibly even its strike range and capabilities. Angel set up a layup point so she could leave some of her heavy equipment like the anti-material rifle. The massive 50 caliber gun wouldn't exactly be much use in close quarters, and she was going to be dealing with, so it would be just excess weight that would slow her movement down. So deciding to take up a short-range gear like a suppressed pistols only, Angel shed any of her non-essential gear and ammo, leaving it under a camouflage torp she'd set up to hide the sniper position. Once she'd activated her cloaking systems, she slowly began to pick her way down the hillside towards the bottom of the valley where the massive support pillars for the overpass were embedded. It was obvious from the lack of supports and scaffolding running up the side of these massive concrete pillars that held up the road, the troops stationed above hadn't ascended to it this way. Angel figured they must have come in along the road itself until they reached the place where it broke up, and then they'd set up, knowing that anyone wanting to attack them could only really come from one direction. Oh, so they thought. One of the things that Angel had brought with her was her climbing equipment, and she had a sneaky suspicion that she was going to need it on this job. Turns out she was right on the money yet again. So pulling a grappling hook from her belt, she attached a length of rope to it and began to swing it until she had enough velocity to send it soaring into the air and over the top of one of the hanging metal support beams that ran along the underside of the bridge. She did this to get as close to the main pillar as she could, where the metal was most likely going to be the strongest and most well anchored. Once it was in place and the hook was set, Angel could essentially just walk up the wall holding onto the rope. If she fell, she did have a plan to use a hit of psychokinesis to break her fall. All she'd have to remember to do was not scream, and that bit would be a bit of a fucking giveaway to those above if she did. Angel was very glad that she maintained her peak physical fitness, as her arms and shoulders and hips were burning like she'd rolled into a radioactive puddle by the time she'd made it to the top of the beam above her. Once safely straddled on the metal beam, she recovered her grappling hook and coiled up the rope, securing it on the clips on her belt, to ensure they'd be ready for action should she need it again. Which, given the shitstorm that would descend on this place the second she pulled the trigger, she got the feeling she would need it again very soon. Angel lifted herself up onto a sitting position into a squatted crouch on the narrow metal girder. By her approximation, she should be able to use these girders to climb her way up to the underside of the overpass itself. From there, she should be able to enter the camp. though she'd have to be careful of the spotting holes and shooting slots they'd cut into the sides of the panelling. Even as good as her cloak was, it wasn't good enough to hide if she happened to climb pretty much over someone's face. So moving slowly and confidently, Angel walked along the beam like it was a balance beam back in the gym. Once at the end, closest to the support pillar, she began to use the frame itself anchoring to the cement to ascend directly upwards. It didn't take her long to climb directly underneath the platform that contains the road, as well as the artillery encampment. From down here, she can hear the hustle and bustle of the Minutemen military camp directly above her head. Angel slowly and carefully moved herself out from under the support network and out onto the outside of the large pillar. From here, the handholds are a little more tricky, as once she reaches the level where the blacktop was, she'll have to climb directly up the metal walls the Minutemen have erected themselves. And they weren't exactly designed to be climbed from the outside. Quite the opposite, really. Now, she could use a psychokinesis hit to propel herself up and over the wall, but she really wanted to avoid doing that, if it could be avoided, as it would drop her down into a whole world of trouble, and as she really doesn't know what's on the other side of these walls, probably be better to play it safe for now. So carefully, Angel uses a combination of her strength and the tools to climb higher until she, after a great effort, she finally managed to hoist herself up onto the top of the wall. Now she gets her first good look into the base itself. She instantly finds herself both surprised and rather impressed at what the Minutemen have accomplished here. The base itself was well laid out. She'd rather expected the place to be rather haphazard, but it simply wasn't. They had neatly laid out buildings, all clustered around two large-looking guns that sat in the centre of two gun pits that he'd set up right in the centre of the camp, well away from anything else, to minimise risk. From the size of the guns, Angel could tell they had quite a range to them. She'd estimate at least 15 to 20 miles in any direction, easily. With a couple of these set up at various settlements or strategic locations, wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility to create a decent network that could hammer any part of the region of Boston with pretty heavy fire at a moment's notice. Angel dropped down on the inside of the wall and moved to hug some of the supply crates nearby. She continues to observe the encampment. To her left, the barracks where the soldiers are living. Not much more than a couple of series of two-story wooden buildings, though while they've been rapidly erected, did look rather sturdy. Directly in front of her and past the large guns is the armoury, where the soldiers were keeping surplus weapons and ammunition for both small arms in their possession, as well as the gun battery itself. This place was kind of obvious, as it was definitely the most heavily fortified of all the buildings, having iron and steel plating affixed to the outside walls to prevent any kind of accident. They seemingly had everything they needed here, including a small farm plot set up to grow their own on-site fruit and vegetables. But finally, Angel spotted the building that she was truly looking for, the command bunker. It was relatively small and unassuming, but thanks to the whip-like radio aerials and the miniature satellite dish bolted to the top of the roof, it was kind of obvious. Slowly, Angel picked her way around the outer wall, hugging it to reduce her profile as she moved, and allowing her cloaking tech to do its job. Every time one of the heavily armed Minutemen soldiers came in close, she simply froze in place and tracked them with one of her silent pistols just in case. When she was clear, Angel got close enough to the command building to hear the conversations being held inside. "This is Echo 1, go ahead, Command," a deep gravelly voice said. There was a muffled reply that indicated the speaker was listening to the response on a pair of military-grade headphones. "Roger that, all quiet here so far. No sign of any intruders or anyone approaching the camp. I have spotters and patrols out searching the area around, so if anyone does try to get close, we should pick them up," a deep-voiced man said. Angel got the feeling this was her target, Leviathan. It also appeared that the Minuteman Command was now indeed aware of her activities and was actively attempting to thwart her, so that meant that the vertibird she'd seen had indeed been most likely a hunter team sent out to track her down. This meant that she not only needed to be extra cautious, but would have to employ multiple methods to ensure that she managed to take out her targets. She solely relied on sniping them, it would just be too easy for them to hide the targets behind cover. Now, she really needed to show them that no matter what they did, she could still get to them. And that was nothing they could do to prevent it. She would show them what Enclave superiority truly meant. But first, she needed to gather some badly needed intel on this artillery network and its reach, as well as its complete operation. She needed to know how they were calling in the strikes, as well as how accurate it was. So slowly she lifted her head up to look through the window that had obviously been installed to prevent the HQ getting too hot or muggy inside, given the weather here. It was mounted high on the outer wall of the building, in the wooden prefab style building, to prevent any nosy person just happening to peek in. But that wouldn't stop her now, would it? Peeking inside the building was the first thing that Angel noticed, as the window looked straight down into one of the comms rooms, which had four large radio sets, all obviously tuned into different frequencies for picking up calls from not only Minutemen stations, but most likely now from their new allies as well. Each set had a signaler sat working at it, sending and receiving messages as well as decoding and writing down the incoming stuff. They also appeared to have a SIGINT sat directly at the centre of the room. She was a woman in her early 20s and appeared to be working on deciphering some intercepted communications, quite possibly and somewhat worryingly from the Enclave themselves. Thankfully, Angel knew that the Enclave's encryption and protection protocols were ironclad, so it would take them a very long time to breach them without some sort of assistance or inside help. Though it did worry her that they were actually attempting it. That could mean that they were very well aware of their presence here. Moving as silently as she could, Angel hoisted herself in through the very small window and managed to drop herself down inside of the command building. There's a room off to her right, and instantly she sees him. Leviathan. He sat at a desk, apparently plotting some coordinates onto a large map. Appears to be trying to work out a grid system that would obviously provide the most cover for the artillery network, and possibly the best places to set up their guns. On the map, Angel notices a series of blue rings, including the one where they were currently sat. These must indicate the sites that were already equipped with guns. There were also a series of red circles, which he guessed were either potential sites or ones that were currently under construction. And either way, there were far more blue circles dotted over the map than red ones. That's when she noticed his little odd cylinder sat on the corner of his desk, and she moves very slowly to closer to take a look at it, never taking her weapon off the centre of the man's chest, just in case. It appears to be some kind of smoke grenade, and that's when she gets close enough she realises it's an EESG. An EESG, or Electronically Enriched Smoke Grenade, not very common these days. Quite a rare find due to the difficulty in producing the things. But this instantly answers at least one question that Angel had. Now they were calling in targeting for the guns without comm systems. Most likely they had some kind of scanning system back at their HQ. It was calibrated to look for the electronic signals given off by the smoke, which would allow for rapid long-range targeting without direct line of sight. They could then use this signal to work out the coordinates, and most likely contact the closest gun site to saturate the area with heavy artillery fire. This gave Angel all sorts of ideas on how she could use this system against the Minutemen. But it would require two things to happen. First of which is she needed to get her hands on some of those grenades. And she needed to do this before she took out her target. So moving back the way she had come, Angel slipped herself back out of the window of the command centre and moved around the outer wall until she was next to their armoury. Now this place didn't have any windows, for obvious reasons. Kind of makes heavy walls pointless if you have weak spots peppering it. Getting them to open the door would be somewhat tricky, so Angel decided to wait until someone needs to enter the building so she can shadow them through the door, or wait for somebody to come out. But given the back and forth traffic to the place, thankfully she didn't have to wait too long. A couple of sentries obviously coming in back off their patrol, headed into the armoury to report their ammunition that they expended and the reason for it, which given the reason was they gave was mole rats, probably quite extensive given the little fungus had a habit of popping in and out of the ground like the world's ugliest jack in the box, which also made the expenditure understandable. Staying low and slow, Angel moved in through the door and behind the two soldiers as they headed up to the counter to turn in their excess gear and to log everything. She moved to the far wall and remained there hugging a potted plant until they were done and gone. Through the large metal grate, Angel could see the boxes of ESG sitting on the shelves at the rear of the armory, but currently she had no way to get to them because they were sat behind a locked door. Looking deeper into the armory, she could only see there also seemed to be only one person on duty inside, so this would be now as good a time as any to do this. Gently, Angel knocks her fist on the door of the rear access of the armory. "Yes," the quartermaster called from the rear. Angel does not reply, but knocks again. "Yes, what is it?" the quartermaster says, this time much louder, again no response, other than yet another knock. "I swear to Christ, are you fucking... deaf?" the quartermaster yells, storming into the front gate, peering out only to see no one there. The confusion on his face grows deeper as there's yet another knock on the door. He lifts an eyebrow before leaning forward to look down below the lower part of the shelf of his grate, obviously expecting to see a recruit playing some kind of childish prank, ducking down below the counter to wind him up, only to find nothing. Another knock. "What in the name of fuck is doing that?" quartermaster said to himself, heading back into the back area of the armory. Angel heard the jangle of keys and the sound of the door being unlocked from the other side. As the door opened, Angel moves with the speed of a seasoned and true fighter. No sooner had the door opened wide enough to present herself the target than the flat side of her hand slams straight into the quartermaster's throat full force, crushing his windpipe and preventing him from either yelling or even breathing. As he dropped to his knees, struggling to try and breathe, Angel quickly gripped his head and using the weight of a full forward roll, she snapped his neck cleanly and silently. The man's body slumped forward to the floor with his shot expression now coming from between his shoulder blades. Angel moved quickly to drag his lifeless body into the back and stash it out of sight. Then she popped open one of the boxes and retrieved as many EESGs as she could have safely fit into her pouches. And that's when she noticed something that made her smile. Her original plan had been to call down an artillery strike on top of the base once she'd cut the communication lines to the place so that they couldn't call the strike off. But stored at the very back of the armory in a very special container were mini nuke shells. They were originally designed for the Fat Man's shoulder-mounted delivery system, but these ones were rigged to be artillery shells, long-distance micro-nuke delivery system as it were. Just one of these things could take out the whole base, but there were two whole boxes of these containing six shells each, sat right here, just waiting. So, with some quick work and rigging up a time charge, which was hopefully and thankfully sitting on one of the shelves, and setting a timer, Angel rapidly made aware of the base. She hadn't set long on the timer, only 10 minutes, which should give her long enough to clear, but hopefully not long enough for someone to discover it and defuse it. Though if somebody did and did try, she had left a little surprise in the form of an anti-tamper grenade directly under the shell. So if someone shifted it, i.e. the charge, the spoon would pop, and so would the grenade. Angel was only halfway back down her rope when she heard shouting from above her. It seemed that someone had indeed discovered the dead body of the quartermaster, and by the distinct increase in noise, only a moment later, they discovered her charge too. The blast from the top of the bridge shook the whole thing, and sent Angel falling straight as she lost her grip on the rope she was climbing. As she fell backwards towards the ground far below her, Angel could see a huge white and gold light bathing the world above her, from the mini-nukes all detonating at once. She could see a wave of fire and heat washing outwards, positively evaporating the walls of the base. Though thankfully for her, the concrete was thick enough that it didn't come downwards as well. Though, to be fair, that really didn't help, given that she was most likely falling straight to her death. Thankfully for her, though, she regained just enough of her senses to deploy her psychokinesis just before she hit the ground, which absorbed the vast majority of the force of the impact, thankfully, though it did still cause her to bump her on the ground a bit like a rag doll as she hit it. Finally, as she sat up, Angel saw a massive mushroom cloud raising from the top of the overpass where the artillery base had once stood. It was just gone. There wasn't even any debris raining down like you would have expected from such a monumental blast. Though the clicking of the Geiger counter in her stealth suit told her it was about high time to get the fuck out of there, that wasn't unless she wanted a whole lot less hair to worry about combing in the mornings. Quickly getting to her feet, Angel dusted herself off. She knew now she was going to have to decontaminate thanks to this little trick. And thankfully, she did always carry some Radaway in her medical kits. She could definitely call this hit a success, if not a little unorthodox. Dark Angel to Dark Sky Actual, how copy, over? She said into her comms as she quickly made her way out of the area and began the torturous process of creating a series of false trails as she headed for home. Solid copy, Dark Angel, go ahead, over. The comms operator said into her earpiece. Leviathan is down. I repeat, Leviathan is down. Confirmed kill, nuclear detonation, over, Angel said. Roger that, Dark Angel, good work as always. That's a little out of character for you, over. Comms operator said, sounding a little surprised at the method she'd just reported in for the kill. Needs must when the devil drives, Dark Sky. Over, Angel said. Roger that, Dark Angel. Keep us in the loop. Dark Sky Actual. Over and out, comms operator said, and the comms line closed down. It took Angel hours to finally trudge back to her base of operation. She spent most of that time laying down false trails in the hope of throwing off her pursuers so that they wouldn't be able to follow her quickly back to her temporary home base in the city. And she knew that the safe protocol would dictate that when she left for the next job, it'd be the last time she ever used this place. Which, while being a pain in the arse, she rather liked this place, but it was for the best. So after a quick decontamination shower and suit check for any potential breaches, and thankfully there were none, Angel hid herself with some Radaway to clear out any of the shit that might have made it through the suit. Though to be fair, these things were pretty well shielded. Not as good, say, as a set of power armour, but good all the same. Angel burned the two documents relating to Rook and Leviathan until there was nothing left but simply an ash smear. Nothing that could be used to recover anything or link her to her or the Enclave. So as she fished through her remaining documents, she selected the two for tomorrow. She knew in her heart that today's progress were going to make things infinitely more difficult for her. After hearing yet another two of their commanders had fallen, the Hunter team would definitely be out for blood. Now, while she knew it could be effectively proven that she was behind this last killing, there was nothing left of the base or anyone left inside it for them to be able to pin it on her either way. But to say that a base just happened to contain one of their field commanders, just happened to turn to glass on the same day as another one of their field commanders happens to get shot, is a coincidence that's a bit of a stretch in anyone's book, really. The next two targets were codenamed Raptor and Pigeon. Raptor was responsible for the effort to organise the local farms into rotating their crops to aid both food production as well as distribution in the zone. He was currently in the process of setting up both trade routes and deals between these farms to supply produce to both Diamond City as well as the Brotherhood. These deals would be quite a win for the Minutemen, as not only would the farms profit from this, allowing them to expand their operations, but also the Minutemen would have more funds funneling into their coffers as a result. So, if it did happen to fall through, it would have a major blow to their military economy, really. There were, unfortunately, multiple locations a Raptor could possibly be at, as he did tend to move around an awful lot due to his role. One of these locations was the Brotherhood base itself, and given the insane level of security at the place due to the presence of an Elder there, Angel was going to be staying pretty damn far away from that place. Now, Pigeon, so obviously named because she was the liaison sent to work with the local avian people. Apparently, according to the intelligence report, these avians have been working closely with the Brotherhood in recovering and sharing technology within their territory. And now the Minutemen were looking to do some sort of deal with them as well. There were possible links to the Free People setting up this whole thing, so there were unconfirmed reports that there may be a liaison team from there present at the meeting as well. The meeting itself was scheduled to take place in Minutemen territory in 2 days. The nurse just gave her a single day to pin down and take out Raptor in order to make her way to the meeting place, where the meeting was supposed to be taking place between the avian representative and the Minutemen. Now, she knew the place was going to be heavily guarded, and what with her recent activity, there was a very real possibility that one of three outcomes may occur because of this. One, they postponed the meeting until a later date until she was apprehended. Simply just change her plan. Two, heavily increased security, making it much more difficult to get close, but never impossible. Three, they change the meeting's venue to a location they deem more secure, such as in Free People's territory or possibly even the Avians' territory. What? Out of the three, the last one really, in her opinion, posed the most challenge, as there was no intel truly on either the Free People's territory or maybe even the Avians' territory, as the Enclave had not been able to get people inside either organisation as of yet. So there was nothing that could be said about either of them, really, that wasn't pure speculation. If outcome three happened, the risk posed to her would be much greater, increased, as she knew neither the Avians nor the Free Peoples were to be taken lightly. The Avians had fought a war against the Brotherhood, and not only managed to hold them off, but looked like they could have possibly won it in the long run, without the intervention, that was. Now, the Free Peoples were by and far, her opinion, the greatest threat of all the groups, as very little was known of their actual fighting capabilities, other than every single fight that ever entered into, they'd won. Very little effort, and no losses. Other than having people with similar powers to herself in their ranks, and being led by one such individual who was deemed to be an Enclave traitor, truly very little was known about the actual extent of their combat readiness and capabilities. Though it was well known that they had a multitude of different species in their ranks, such as tame deathclaws, even super mutants to name but a few. This alone made them dangerous. But the fact that they seemed to be very effectively know how to deploy these creatures as weapons of war spoke volumes as to their skills in battle. But the problem was very few ever survived any kind of encounter with them, so actionable intel on their numbers and methods was sketchy at best. Angel knew that avoiding a fight with them was going to be best, as going up against the Brotherhood, Minutemen or even the Avians was one thing. But these people, in her opinion, they were by far the most dangerous of the lot of them. Anyone who could deploy Deathclaws prepared to fight for you to the battlefield at a moment's notice was an opponent to be respected for sure. And she didn't want to get into a scuffle with them until she was absolutely sure of what the hell she was dealing with. But, on the other hand, if this meeting was indeed going to have representatives of the Free Peoples present, then it might be a very good way to observe them, and to get some solid intel that she could report back to the Enclave, either during her call-in after the target was downed, or during the after-mission debrief when she returned to the base. She was very sure that her superiors would be rather pleased to have something more concrete to work with other than ifs and maybes that they did have at the moment. She knew that there were currently other operations going on that were tasked with attempting to subvert their current operations in various areas, and this actually told her a lot, despite not actually having any details on the function or even locations of said operations. The fact that there were multiple of them, and that they were rather likely spread out, told her that the organisation was surprisingly large and spread out itself, and that they were well equipped and prepared to fight, and they had the skills to do so already. Angel couldn't wonder to herself, though, what was truly the appeal to join these Free Peoples in the first place? Why did they do it? Why betray their own races and pledge their allegiance to those who would commingle them with such vastly different to themselves? Did these people believe in staying in their lane and keeping to their own at all? She really did have a million questions bouncing around in her mind about this mysterious organisation, and even more about their mysterious leader, Number 7. Now this guy was the thing that mystified Angel the most about the Free Peoples. From what she understood, Number 7 was once a member of the Enclave, specifically something to do with the bioweapons division, much like she was herself. This was meant he should have enjoyed the prestige, rank and even privilege that she herself enjoyed. So why the hell would he throw it all away to help a bunch of non-human degenerates like he had? What could possibly drive him to give up the life that had been laid out for him in aiding and restoring the USA under the Enclave. Someone with his power would have been hailed as a hero within their ranks and afforded the very best of everything. He would have had his picks of the units to command. He would have most likely had a good deal of ranks above her at this point. But instead he just said fuck it and thrown it all away to run around with a bunch of deathclaws and subhumans. And the same could be said about number 3. She too fell into the same category. Well, not as powerful in the combat arena as number 7. She had other potentials as an intelligence gatherer. Hell, Spectres would have welcomed her with open arms given her abilities, which while the extents of which were still shrouded in mysteries, the results of which were blatantly obvious with anyone half a brain to tell. If she ever got the chance to confront either of them face to face, she was really going to have to ask these questions, or she never would forgive herself for having to live with them rent-free rattling around in her head for the rest of her life. But for now, she had a job to do, and it was only going to get harder from here, so there was a lot of work left to do. Yes, that was a chapter 152, ladies and gentlemen. And it looks like Angel's on the warpath. She's 3 for 3 with no problems. Is the Brotherhood and the Free Peoples going to be able to stop her? Or will Angel be able to take out the Minutemen's commanders? Going to be only one way to find out the answer to those questions and so many more. Going to have to tune in next time. So until next time, this is Ghost Nobody signing off and saying, I'll see you all next time.